We have been in this series, Into the Wilderness, and we are working our way to Jesus, to his wilderness journey, and ultimately to the cross. But today, as we enter into week four, we're going to continue our journey through the Old Testament. We looked at Adam and how he was led into or driven into the wilderness because of sin, and Abraham was called by faith, Moses was shaped before leading God's people, and now, for week four, we're going to look at David. And his wilderness story. And, like all of our stories, his just starts a little bit differently. Because when we see him, the first thing we get from him is he is anointed as king by God through the prophet Samuel. But instead of like immediately stepping into a crown, David ends up hiding out in the wilderness, dwelling in caves out there, and it's something we're going to look at. And I got a lot of ground to cover. If you've ever read through David's journey and story, there's so much there, and so I'm gonna do my best to get through it. I'm gonna paraphrase a lot of what I'm gonna get, some of the scriptures that I'm gonna share with you, because it takes up chapters and chapters and chapters of his story. But we're gonna look at this about David's wilderness journey, how it began, and how he started kind of hiding out in the wilderness. And this is important because I think a lot of times what happens is like we get excited about something God has called us to or something God has promised to us or anointed us for, but we don't always realize that there may be another wilderness between the calling and the fulfillment of what he called us to, right? And it's like just because you are called to it, it doesn't necessarily mean that you're ready for it. And so that means that there's going to be shaping, there's going to be preparation. And through David's story, we're going to learn, we're going to see that often God will call you to something early, but shape you for it slowly. And there's this process that's taking place. So we'll dive right into David's story. We'll start in 1 Samuel 16, there will be some scriptures up there, and I'll call for them when they are, but for the most part, I'm going to be just talking through some of these things. And so in 1 Samuel 16, what we see is we get the prophet Samuel is called to go to Bethlehem to anoint a new king over Israel because the Lord had rejected Saul. And so he's told to go to Bethlehem, and when he gets there, Samuel kind of goes through all seven of Jesse's sons, and one after another, and God says, none of them are it. And there's this moment in verse 11 of chapter 16, where Samuel says this, are these all the sons you have? And Jesse says, well, they're still the youngest, but right now he's tending the sheep. And Samuel said, well, send for him. And this is it, and this is where we're introduced to David. And it's not in the palace. It's not him leading a military or leading people. It's not in a place of status. David is out with the sheep. And it's so interesting because David's wilderness journey, his story begins as a shepherd. And if you remember from last week, for Moses, guess what? God chose a shepherd. He sent him out to become a shepherd, and he chose a shepherd to then come and lead his people. David shows up. The Lord says, this is the one. 1 Samuel 16:12, the Lord said, anoint him, for he is the one. The one who was out in the wilderness tending to the sheep, he is the one. And so the shepherd is anointed king, but is not yet appointed to the kingship. And so 1 Samuel 16 goes on and it shows us that following his anointed, David is brought into the palace, brought into the kingdom, but it's not as the king. It was as a servant to the king. If you know the story, David goes and he begins to play and to sing for King Saul, and he's soothing his anxieties, his anxious thoughts, and the spirits that torment him. And we see that the anointed king begins to serve the current king before ever sitting on the throne. In chapter 17, the story goes on. This is the moment where David comes along and he slays Goliath, right? And he steps into this moment of like courageous leadership to secure a victory that ultimately brings praise to the current king and what he's doing. Yeah, David receives it, but at the end of the day, Saul is still king. And you look at this progression, right? The shepherd, David, is anointed. And after he's anointed, he begins serving. And then after he serves, he begins to fight, and he achieves a victory. But you look through it all, and it's not for his, you know, it's not for the kingdom that he would rule over. It's not for his glory. Ultimately, it's for God's kingdom and God's glory. And you just begin to see the makings. Like, God is beginning to shape David into a humble and courageous and godly king one day. And so you read through all this, and you see all that David's doing, and he's doing it for God, and he's, you know, coming alongside, and he's helping King Saul. And you would go, man, all of this, after soothing the king's tormentors and slaying the king's enemies, this would, like, naturally have David step into the crown, right? But instead, what happens is David's success turns into King Saul's jealousy. And that jealousy turns into rage. And that rage turns into, like, murderous intent. And this is where our story continues. In 1 Samuel 19, Saul orders Jonathan, his son, and his servants to go out and kill David. And Jonathan's like, no, like, we respect this guy. There's no reason for it. We're not sure what's happening. Dad, but you're losing it, right? And so he refuses. In verse 9 and 10, it tells us this, that David is once again playing for the king, serving him, helping him, ministering to him. But there's this jealousy, this rage, this murderous intent. And Saul in this moment tries to pin David to the wall with his spear, but David escapes. And this is really where we begin to see David spending time in a prolonged season of wilderness, right? And the actions of the current king, if you remember from Samuel, he has been rejected. Those actions lead the anointed king into a life of dwelling in caves instead of presiding in the castles. And again, it's not just for, like, a short period of time either. It's not like this was, like, you know, it was a few weeks or a few months or just a year went by. Man, we know that David was anointed in his teens, but doesn't end up becoming appointed as king until he gets into his 30s. And so the wilderness shaping happens in the in-between. And those wilderness moments, and we've been talking about this whole time, those wilderness moments, they matter so much. Because the wilderness between anointing and appointing are where God shapes who you will become when you finally step into what he promised to you. And that is what he's doing in David's life. David had to learn to become a king, to act like a king before he ever even sat on the throne. And so King Saul tries to kill him, and you read through chapter after chapter, and, you know, essentially David becomes a fugitive. There's, you know, a reward, a price on his head, right? And so he runs from the current king. He flees from place to place to place, and you're following this journey along, and, like, he goes from the priestly hospitality, which we'll talk about in a minute, to living in enemy encampments, to going out into the wilderness, right, in the desert, in the caves and rocks. And essentially what happens is David, who's anointed to be king, spends most of his journey before becoming king hiding out in caves. But you got to understand, it's not just hiding. He's not just out there hiding in caves. In these unpredictable environments, he's experiencing testing and temptation. God is shaping him. And this is where, as I was looking at this whole series, and we were going from these stories all the way to Jesus, I began to see this comparison to Jesus' wilderness journey, right? And that's what we're going to get to next week. And so we know that before Jesus started his ministry and did what he set off to do, he was led into the wilderness, and he faced temptation before he stepped into his purpose. And so, like him, David also faces temptation in the wilderness before stepping into his purpose. And through those temptations, here's what God does. God reveals that David is a man after God's own heart. Now, he's not Jesus. He's not perfect like Jesus, right? He makes mistakes. He acts rashly, but he's a man after God's own heart. And so God sent David into the wilderness to test his resolve, to test his faith, and ultimately to test his reliance on who God is and also in what God promised. So connecting these two things, Jesus and David's temptations in the wilderness, when Jesus is tempted in the wilderness, like Chris just talked to you about that just a little bit for communion. Like I've categorized these things. Like there's a temptation of provision, there's a temptation of protection, and there's this temptation of timing, like bringing it into your timing or someone else's timing as opposed to God's timing and his plan. And David's story kind of follows a similar pattern. It's not exactly the same, but you begin to see some of these things playing out. And so David's wilderness temptations is going to be threefold. It's self-provision over God's provision. That's a temptation. The second temptation is self-preservation over God's protection. And then the third one is self-advancement or promotion, like trying to get there before God's timing. And you'll see this in David's wilderness story. So let's jump right in. David's first temptation, right? This self-preservation over God's provision, or self-provision over God's provision, right? This is to provide for oneself because there's this thought that maybe God won't. If I don't do this, then I don't know if I'll be secure. I don't know if I'll have what I'll need. I don't know if I'll be provided for. So I'm being tempted to take matters into my own hands. And so when we get into this story in 1 Samuel 21, David's on the run. He comes to a priest. His name is Ahimelech in the town of Nob, and he's on the run. And he's vulnerable, and he's hungry, and he asks. David asks for bread and supplies, and the priest tells him, well, there's no ordinary bread. There's only consecrated bread. It's holy bread. Now, David is in need before heading deeper into the wilderness, before going on the run. And you note the difference. Because Jesus goes into the wilderness to fast, right? And he is tempted with bread. David enters the wilderness asking for bread. Because he needs it. He needs it. He needs help. He needs support. He needs survival. And the need itself isn't sinful, but it leads to consequences that were. And so later, King Saul finds out that the priest Ahimelech had helped David, gave him bread, gave him a sword, inquired to God for him, and Saul sees it as conspiracy, and King Saul, not being in his right mind, orders that the priest, all of the priests, be killed. And we find in 1 Samuel 22:18 that 85 priests were killed because of those actions. And you read on a little bit more, and it wasn't just the priests. Like, it was like the entire city of Nob was just taken out. Like, there were men, women, children, livestock were all destroyed. And later, we get to this moment in 1 Samuel 22:22, where David finds out about what happened, and he says this. He says, I myself am responsible for the lives of everyone in your father's family. And it's talking about Ahimelech. And in this moment, like, David's taking responsibility. And, you know, ultimately, it's King Saul's, right? This is an action that he did and he chose to do. But David still feels the weight of it. And he carries it. And I go, man, this is how a shepherd king would feel. This is the burden and the weight of it. And this matters because I believe in the wilderness, it is where the weight of God's calling, the weight of God's anointing, the weight of leadership starts becoming real, right? It's in those wilderness moments when we're pressed, when we're in need, when we have to make a choice, where the weight of the burden of the decisions that we make not only affects us, but affects other people. And so David learns in the wilderness that even when you're trying to survive, the decisions around you can still carry painful consequences, right? The wilderness presses our need for provision and whether or not we will trust God for it. Then the story moves on. We get to the second temptation. This one is self-preservation over God's protection, right? The temptation to protect oneself because maybe God won't. Or maybe he won't in the way that we want or when we want or how we want. And this is probably one of the most powerful scenes in David's wilderness story. It's found in 1 Samuel 24. David's out in the wilderness, and he's running around, and you know Saul's catching wind of where he's at, and Saul goes looking for David in the wilderness for like 3,000 men. Like, he's going for one thing. He wants to just destroy David and all of his men. And so as they're out there, they take a break, and King Saul enters a cave, and he has to go in there to relieve himself, okay? And out of all the caves in all the wilderness, you know which one he chooses? The one that David and his men are hiding out in, right? And so Saul walks right into one of David's wilderness hideouts. And David's men, like, and he doesn't know he's there. And David's men immediately are like, this is it. David, this is your opportunity, right? This is the day that the Lord told you about. Take him out, end this, protect yourself, secure your future. And they're like, find relief from dwelling in caves and wandering in the wilderness. And that's the temptation. Not just power, not just that you can. This is self-preservation. The question, this is not just a question of can I take the throne? But will I trust God to protect me until I get to the throne? Will I remember his promise? And you read through this story, and it's like, you kind of look at it, and you bring it into context, and you're like, man, at the end of the day, like, David's men are kind of right. Like, David has every human reason to take Saul out. Saul's hunting him. Saul is unjust. He's dangerous. He's already tried to kill David on multiple occasions. And David's men are basically telling him, like, listen, man, this is God's will. God brought the king right at your doorstep. He doesn't know. He is vulnerable. Do what you desire. But David doesn't take his life. He cuts off the corner of his robe and uses that to prove to King Saul that he's not trying to hurt him, harm him, or against him. And so in this moment, what happens is David refuses to step into God's promise through sin. He's not going to act like Saul is acting, because he trusts that if God promised it, God will fulfill it without David having to take matters into his own hands. And once again, just like we learned in Abraham's story, there's this belief that what God promised will come to pass despite present circumstances, despite what's happening, despite the fact that you're on the run, that you're in the wilderness. And so in this moment, David, in effect, says this: I will not become king by losing my integrity. In 1 Samuel 24, verse 16, 17, and 20, after David goes out and reveals that he was in the cave and he could have taken Saul's life, this is how Saul responds. Verse 16, then Saul wept aloud and said to David, you are more righteous than I, for you have done what is good to me, though I have done what is evil to you. And look at this. Now I know, verse 20, for certain you will be king, and the kingdom of Israel will be established in your hand. And it's almost like there's this confirmation from God through David's grace, through Saul, that what he said will come to pass before David ever becomes the king. God is shaping him to be a better man. And we see that play out in this second temptation. Then we get to the final and third temptation. It's very, very similar to the other ones, but it plays out a little bit differently. But it's self-advancement over God's timing, right? Promoting oneself before God desires it, before God wills it, before God wants it to happen. And so in 1 Samuel 26, we fast forward just a little bit. Saul went back on his word, you know, and he's trying to kill David again. And we get to this moment where David has another chance to kill him. And so the story covers a lot of verses, so I'm going to do my best to paraphrase it. So Saul once again comes after David in the wilderness. He brings all his men. He's coming in full force. But there's something a little bit different. David's not just hiding out, holding his breath in the back of the cave. Instead, he moves toward the situation. He takes action before the situation could get worse. And so Saul's camped out, and David is there. And so what happens is David goes down into Saul's camp at night. And there in the center of the camp, Saul, all his men, you know, his the commander of his army, Abner, they're all asleep. And so David and another man of his are surrounded by the army, surrounded by the enemy, completely vulnerable, and they're all sleeping. And right there next to the king is the king's spear, right beside his head. and one of David's men, his name is Abishai, looks at David and says this, 1 Samuel 26:8, "Today, God has handed your enemy over to you." He says, "Let me thrust the spear through him into the ground just once. I won't have to strike him twice." But David says to Abishai, "Don't destroy him. For who can lift a hand against the Lord's anointed and be blameless?" David added, "As the Lord lives, the Lord will certainly strike him down. Either his day will come and he will die, or he will go into battle and perish." And there, once again, there's this opportunity, there's this temptation to take what God already promised. And it's like, it's almost like clear as day. You know, sometimes we like ask God for a sign. "God, just show me, reveal something to me. I just really want to know it's clear." Like, what could be more clear than the king, the guy that's trying to kill you, is asleep, and he's already given you the weapon to kill him. And some of us would be like, "Sweet, bam, I'm out of here." Can't be more clear. Or going back to the cave, like the dude's brought to my doorstep. "God, what I wanted, what I desired is right here. I can take him out. I can live out my will." But David's going, "This is not how I'm called to step into the kingship." He could have ended it. No more running, no more hiding, no more caves. One decision, one moment, the crown is his. But David says, "Don't do it. Don't destroy him." And then he says something so profound, "The Lord will deal with him when the Lord wants to." And it's just such a powerful moment. So what does he do? He takes the king's spear and spares his life. He chooses restraint, mercy, and honor. And he leaves room for God's will to play out. Because again, David knows God anointed him to be king, period. And so what he's going to do is he's going to honor and respect the current king until the time that God chooses to remove him, not David. And so he's showing his men something. He's showing his kingdom something. Like, he's learning to trust God's timing over his own impulses, over his own plan, over his own timing. He's learning and beginning to understand that the decisions you make in the wilderness determine who you will become for the kingdom. And the same is true for you and I. For the kingdom, and for David, we're talking about his, as he enters into, but I'm talking about for you and I in the kingdom of heaven. And we all go through these wilderness journeys, and the decisions we make in the wilderness determine what we're going to do for the kingdom. And so let's jump back into that line of thought, the first line of thought. Just because you're anointed doesn't mean you are ready to be appointed. God will call you, and then God will shape you. And this is exactly what God is doing in David's wilderness. And we look at that. Like, what is God shaping in David? He's shaping restraint. He's shaping mercy, respect, and honor. He's shaping patience and trust and courage. Listen, God shapes leadership before the title ever arrives. And some of us think, well, I'm going to get the title and then I'll be shaped. No, 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 no. Right now, whatever season you're in, whatever you're going through, how you react, how you respond, how you choose to honor the season that you're in will determine who you become in the next one. Will determine the leadership that you step into. Because look, if you cannot act like a king in the caves, you most likely will not act like one in the castle. And it's so powerful. If you can't act like a king in your lowest time, are you going to do it in your highest time? Like, who you are, how you react in the most trying and difficult moments, your cave moments, your wilderness moments, will be reflected and seen in your most fulfilling moments, those kingdom moments. You see, choosing to treat people with respect and honor, grace and forgiveness, even when they do not deserve it, it sets you up as someone who has integrity and character. And at the end of the day, that grace you show, that respect you show, that forgiveness that you show in response to attacks against you and against your character will show others the truth about you and also reveal the truth about the one slandering you. Show them grace. Show them mercy. Show them forgiveness. Show them that you're going to choose to honor God no matter how much or how difficult or how badly they treat you. Let them see that God is still the one in control and that you believe that. And so David faces these temptations. And they ask three things. Will I trust God to provide? Will I trust God to protect? Will I trust God's timing? And that's it. And I think we see this clear lesson from David. Don't leave the shaping in the wilderness before God desires it. Like we get the calling and we want it now. We love what God promised and says to us and calls us to, and we go, let's go. And God goes, I love your excitement. You're not ready just yet. I got to shape you. Don't step out of the wilderness before you are shaped to do what God called you to. And as you're in the wilderness, be very, very mindful of the enemy's temptation, because he wants to keep you what God has anointed you for. He wants you to choose a different route than what God is leading you on. Not only is the wilderness where God forms you, it's also the place where the enemy wants to ruin you. Do you understand? God is going to form you there, but the enemy is going to see it as an opportunity when you're at your lowest, when things aren't as you expected, you're not where God appointed you or called you, and the enemy's going to go, good, they're vulnerable right now. Let's really test their resolve. Let's really test their faith. Let's really see if they trust God for provision and protection and his timing. Be careful. In your wilderness journeys, be careful what voices you listen to there. Be careful about what decisions you make there. Be careful about what offense you hold on to there. And be very, very careful about what shortcuts you are trying to take there. As David is tempted, the question becomes, will he take matters into his own hands? Or will he trust God's perfect will for his life? And I believe the same question is posed to us. When God calls us to something, anoints us to something, promises something, and it doesn't happen immediately or in our timeline or the way that we expected, are we going to force provision? Are we going to preserve ourselves through sin? Will we manipulate God's timing? Will we seize what God promised before God gives it? How will we respond? And this matters. Deeply. Because if we're willing, the wilderness can teach us a few things. How to wait without grasping, right? And how to trust without forcing, and how to obey without seeing, and how to be shaped before being elevated, before getting to that place where God called us to. Listen, you may have to slum it in some caves before you're ready to enter the castle. You may have to spend some time in the wilderness before you're ready to step into your calling. And no matter how long that is, it doesn't mean that God forgot you. It means that he's trying to shape you there. Are you pressing into that? As we close out our time, I ask you to bow your heads, close your eyes, and we'll just enter into a time of just prayer and reflection. And these questions matter. All these questions matter. Do we trust his provision? Do we trust his protection? Do we trust his timing? David was forced into a wilderness of hiding. I wonder today whose words, whose betrayal, whose failure, whose wrong accusations have caused you to feel like you're living in the wilderness. Someone may have chased you there to harm you, to hurt you, to hold you back. But can I just remind you today that God can use that wilderness to shape you and to prepare you and even propel you forward to what he has for you? The question becomes this: are you focusing more on who or what put you in the wilderness, or on how God is trying to prepare you there? Because we can look at this both ways. And we can go, woe is me and pity to me, and say, I can't believe this happened and they said this and this caused this. Or we can go, I'm going to remember what God said. I'm going to remember what God promised. I'm going to remember that God is still with me. And I'm going to remember that his will for my life is better than anything else. Which one are you focusing on? You can choose to continue to just, you know, wrestle with what happened and run that back through time and time again and just let that be your pity party in the wilderness. Or you can say, God, I'm here and I don't like why I'm here, but show me your will. Show me what you're doing. God, shape me right now. Help me to respond in the right way. Help me to react in the right way. Help me to be someone who has got character and integrity, love and honor, respect and grace and mercy and forgiveness, no matter what is done to me. God, I don't want to take anything by force. I don't want to do anything in my own timing for my own advancement. I want to be shaped by you so you can do what you want to do through me so that you will be given glory. What are you focusing on? What's shaping you right now? Is it bitterness or is it forgiveness? Is it your pride? Or is it humility? Is it revenge? Or is it mercy? God, right now, will you just help us to see past the hurt, see past the pain, get past the doubts and the uncertainty and all the unknowns of not knowing, all the questions of what if and why and how. God, would you just help us see that you're working, that you're moving through the pain, through the trials, through the heartache. There's temptation, but you're trying to show us to rely on you and trust in you no matter what. And yes, it'll help us for the season that we're in, but it's going to be so fruitful for what you're leading us to. God, would you continue to shape us? Would you continue to have us rely on you, to turn to you, to go to you, to seek you? How would you continue to remind us of Jesus' victory, not only on the cross, but also in the wilderness? God, would you move us to forgiveness? Would you move us to being people of peace and compassion? Continue to shape us and prepare us for what you have next. Thank you for these stories of old that carry so many lessons for us in our lives today. We may be in the wilderness, we may be dwelling in caves, or it feels like that, but today we are choosing to believe that you are with us, that you are for us, and that you are shaping us. It's in your name I pray. Amen.